All right. Next question.
Okay, from Shelly Bell. Am I in breach of relationship with Yah by not staying in a relationship with those not with MTOI and Beth Shalom any longer and outsiders? I do love them, but not in a relationship with them anymore.
Am I in breach of relationship with Yah by not staying in a relationship with them? No. Okay, look. We're going to cover this Friday, okay? Because it actually is connected. I'll give you a little, I guess, hint because some of you are going to think, well, I'm not going to be watching on Friday. Well, you should, or at least watch it after it's recorded. So what do we have going on in this week's Torah portion? The golden calf. All right? And so what happens after the golden calf? The Levites step up. Now notice how this plays out. Moses says, who is for Yah? And Levi steps up, not knowing what that meant or what they were going to be expected to do. He says, oh, good, I'm glad you guys stepped up. Now go kill all your relatives and everybody else that out there that was not for Yah. Okay, did you follow that? Those who stepped up for Yah had to do some really hard things with those that were not. You know, Messiah tells us in Matthew, it's also in Luke, but in Matthew, you know, it says that your belief in choice to believe in him and follow in covenant, in other words, choosing Yeshua, choosing Yah, choosing covenant, may destroy your relationship of a father and a son and a father, a mother and a daughter and a mother, depending whatever direction. And it says, if you love them more than you love him, you're not worthy. And we're going to read that on Friday. But there's a separation. Look, it's going to get tougher and tougher. What do you think this is going to be all about when the false Messiah shows up? Do you think that all those following him are going to have any hesitation throwing you under the bus? Oh, no, we knew each other before. They're not going to do that. Nonsense. Look, your breach of relationship may be the other way around. You may be in a breach of relationship by staying in relationship with those people that are actively attacking and moved on into something that they shouldn't be in. Because it's not like people moved on from, well, it's just another version of this, but it's the same exact thing. No, they're moving on into things that are more of a confused mess. Like I said, it's almost like the Men in Black thing where you go blink and everybody just forgot everything I taught them. And they went back to the vomit. So what I don't understand, okay, listen, it says mother, daughter, sister, brother, father, son, Levites killing literally their own brothers and sisters out there, and you're going to tell me that you still need to stay friends with people that are actively attacking what you're doing here. Oh, but I never heard them say that to me. But you know they did, and they do, and they're not here. Oh, the people out there now having their just losing their minds thinking I'm sounding like a cult leader. Okay? But this is your, listen, look at it in Exodus, then look at it in Matthew. This is literally what it says. It says that you aren't even to break bread with a reviler. What's a reviler? Those who attack what you're doing and revile your leadership. Oh, but they've always been so nice to me. How is that scripturally relevant? Be set apart. So those people are in breach of your relationship. They're in breach of a relationship with this ministry, with me. That's sin from the definition in the sin teaching. It's a breach of relationship. It's not sin like sin between you and him, but it's a breach of relationship. But some of it is relative, or there are relevant verses that have to do with the way you have relationship with people that have chosen to attack. You know, where's the verse? Well, let's start with the verse you know. You know the verse where it says that, and then thousands or whatever people, whatever, stopped walking with Yeshua? You know that verse? Do you see people hanging out with them anymore after that? Chasing them around, having lunch with them, sleeping over at their house, whatever they're doing? No? You don't see that, do you? You're on a journey. Not everybody's going to come with you. That's sad, but it's true. And it is what it is, right? And so, no, you're not in breach of relationship with Yah by not staying in those relationships. You're making a stand that I want to only have relationships with those who have a relationship with Yah in covenantal way. Oh, but these people think they're still in covenant where they went. Maybe, maybe not. Depends on what they're doing. I know what they're being taught by a lot of the teachers. That certainly doesn't match up with covenant. Okay? You know, we got a teacher out there that made a whole little, they even put it out there as a separate teaching that it's okay to go to Sunday church. And it's out there, like, proud of it. Actually popped like an in focus, but not, that's my term for these things. You know? This is where people go from here. They go to places like that. Literally. And yet, you still want to have a relationship with them. I'm not saying, it depends on the level of your relationship. You want to have a relationship with them where you're still a light to them? Be careful that you don't sound like the people saying, I'm going to Sunday church because I'm witnessing. Because that's where you don't want that kind of relationship. Because I got a bunch of people said, oh, I still go to that Sunday church because I'm witnessing. No, you're not. You're witnessing to hypocrisy, to weakness, to I don't know what you're witnessing to. Because if you're in there witnessing and strong, they'd have thrown you out. They would have thrown you out, and you know it. Oh, I'm witnessing. You are. Everything you do is a witness. You're not witnessing to him, though. You're witnessing to weakness and hypocrisy, and you're trying to make whatever you want work, even though it's not what he says. All right? And I'm sorry, but that's just the reality of it. And so I don't understand the relationships that some of you still maintain. I watch you on Facebook, not often, but people tell me about it, and then I look for it and find it, where you guys are all liking posts and being all social with all these people that are, you know, at enmity to this ministry. I don't get it. I'm not telling you you're in trouble for it. That's where I'm saying we're not a cult. I'm not going to get mad at you, throw you out, or anything else. I'm just telling you I don't understand it. Oh, but. What does it mean, but? It's like I used to talk to people that would mention a certain teacher. You know, I'm not going to anybody in particular. They name me a teacher, and that is like naming dates and everything else. And I tell them, well, then you need to get rid of them. They name dates, and it didn't happen. That makes them a false teacher. And they'll say things like, oh, but they were so critical in my coming into understanding. Good. They served their purpose. Move on. Why do you get so emotionally attached? Okay? Yes, they were, I'm glad if that's the case, helpful in a stepping stone from Christianity to where you need to go. But they're a stepping stone, so step off the stone and keep moving. Don't get so emotionally attached. What's the purpose of that? Oh, but I like them. And where is that scripturally, like, an issue? All of this is true unless you like them. Then you can do what you want. It doesn't make any sense. And then some people out there can say, oh, well, Rabbi's so angry. And he does, I don't care. You guys just don't get that. I don't care. The question is really, how does this make you look in his eyes? It doesn't make you look anything in my eyes. I've let you do it for all this time. I know who's doing all these things. If I cared, I'd have said something to you directly. I don't care. I don't understand why you don't care. Why it doesn't matter to you. Oh, do you not read your scriptures? What do you think it means when he says, when you make choices to covenant with him, family members even will be at odds? Like literally, father against son, mother against daughter. That's what it says. Oh, but you don't want to lose your friendship with someone who's enemies with your ministry. Oh, but they've never said anything to me. What does that have to do with anything? Do you really doubt that they've said the things that they've said? You know they have, and they still do. But why aren't they here? Okay, let me ask you a question. Did anybody that you know, this is for Shelley Bell and everybody else, leave here because they found a better teacher or a better place to be, like a better, like there was a step up? Or did they leave here because they had issues because they didn't like me? You know the answer to that. And that's not me, pride. Oh, some people say, oh, this guy needs to be humbled. Did they go and chase after better teaching? Better counseling? Better anything, except that they just don't like my personality. So they ran away from something instead of towards something. Okay? You should never run away. You should go towards. Okay? Don't run away from anything. If there's something to deal with, deal with it. If there's a reason to leave, leave because you're going towards something, not because you're running away. This is what everybody's doing. Okay? People, because they're too weak to deal with their stuff. And they're gonna watch. I know, and here's the funny thing, they're all watching. Elder and I know that they're watching. And all of you that are watching, just understand this. If you would humble yourself and come back, you could come back. I'm not angry. I'm not bitter. Because all of this is basically stupid and childish. Okay? It's all stupid and childish. Okay? But you'd have to humble yourself to come back and own what you did. That's all. Except a lot of you have dug yourself so deep into it, you can't possibly admit now that you are at fault in any way. Which is sad. And you're busy running around telling everybody things I did, only to find out that you're the one who did most of that. And it's what's hidden comes and gets revealed. Okay? But yet, this is what we have. Do you have the maturity to go out and look for what you're supposed to find, and then when you find it, hold on to it real tight? That's the key. Like, are you here? Look, almost all of you moved here. So clearly you didn't just choose your local congregation because it was local and convenient. So you made some effort to vet and pick where you are. Yeah. And all these other people did the same thing and left anyway. Well, a lot of people followed Yeshua and left anyway. I'm not saying I'm Yeshua. You understand what I'm saying is? You can find something and leave anyway. Or at least you think you found it and then leave anyway. Why did the people leave Yeshua? Because they decided he wasn't Messiah? Or because they didn't like what he said? They didn't like what he said. And it wasn't what he said that they didn't like. They didn't like the way he said it. They didn't like the metaphors he was using. Eat my flesh, drink my blood. Why? He could have used different metaphors and made the same point. Yeah, but he did that one knowing he would mess some people up. I do the same thing, by the way. Okay? I use metaphors I know are going to mess some people up to see what you're made out of. You know, it's not just for shock value. Elder can tell you when I do the things that I do, I always, even if it doesn't always seem like I always have a purpose behind it. I'm very aware what I say when I say it. It doesn't just get blurted out and I'm like, you know, I'm like shocked. I'm very aware when I use what I use, when I say what I say, right? I'll just give it a head shake, okay? And you got to know that. But what is this all about? What is your role in all this? You know, we're going to be doing tomorrow, and for all of you that eventually take the Level Up class, you'll get to see this. We're going to be talking about expectations and relationships and all that kind of stuff in the Level Up class. I know you online, you're wondering, okay, we're not offering that to everybody at the moment, okay? But let me just give you a little insight, okay? All relationships have expectations. We agree? If you're a parent, you have expectations of your children have expectations of you. Your husband and wife, expectations. There's also expectations between our Creator and us, right? We read that in the covenant. What does he expect of you, though? I think you've limited that. Let me explain. Well, he expects us to keep Sabbath and eat right and believe in Messiah. Yes, all of those things. But he also expects you, Ephesians 4, and other places, to be a part of a structure and understand your place in that structure. And he's expecting you in the dispersion to find those people Paul was talking about. Find those anointed people. Not just Paul, by the way, because we have Moses saying the same thing when he says, there will be prophets like me that you need to listen to throughout the generations. Don't think of that like a big deal, like, oh, so you think you're Isaiah now or something. No. A prophet was like the 70 who don't have any of their names. The 70 from Moses, their names don't matter. But yet they were prophesying because they had the same anointing from Moses to go and speak the word of Yah with authority. So let's not minimize what that means, but let's not make it into this grandiose thing that only you got to be like Ezekiel and Isaiah and Jeremiah to be a prophet. But you're expected to find what Moses said, that after I'm gone, there will always be men to turn to, and you need to listen to them or you'll be held accountable. but you have to find them. It was easy in Moses' day because the nation had one, and he gave them Joshua next. Anointed, appointed, anoints the next one. So he anoints Joshua. It gets a little muddy through the generations after that. Because those who end up in leadership, once they start with kings, every other king was a disaster. But the king still had prophets to them. And have you ever noticed that the prophets don't turn into a disaster? Only those who are not called and anointed, like the kings. The prophet was the same prophet that was working. You know, look, when Samuel is working with Saul, Samuel doesn't change at all, but Saul does. Samuel's the same all the way through. Nathan's the same way all the way through with David, right? And so let's be understanding expectations. He's expecting you to look for the guide or guidance, the people that are there to help you, the people that in Deuteronomy 17 answer your questions, the people like Moses said that are prophets like unto him that will have the words to answer your questions, etc. Like Paul's talking about in Ephesians 4, so it's not one witness. Paul's saying exactly the same thing Moses said. He just gave titles to the different types of things that they would be doing, things like being evangelical, being prophet, being a teacher, being a shepherd, okay? And so being an apostle. Like he gave these five roles. But the expectation is for you to find that person. And then what Moses says is, and you need to listen to that. You need to listen to that person. Because only that person is speaking on behalf of Yah. He says, because I'm going to put my words in his mouth. You believe that? You don't believe that. Okay? That's what it comes down to. And then knowing that, what do you do with the people that you're friends with, friendly with, associated with, who see what you see, but then they decide to walk away? Now, I think it makes a difference how they walk away. If they just walk away, then you can love on them, and hopefully they'll want to, you know, see your positive example and influence. But if they walk away in a negative way, in other words, if they walk away just because they didn't like leadership or the personality or some other nonsense, and you know that's the case. I don't know, one person's left here over doctrine. Okay? Well, once you taught that, we didn't like that, so we left. Okay? Actually, one person left because we were keeping Purim, and they didn't understand why we would do Purim. Anyway, I'm like, really? All right? Hanukkah and Purim, those are two things we were doing, and they didn't understand why we did them. Of course, that's when I did the teaching, Purim defended, and or Hanukkah, whatever. I did the defense of these things, right? So, you guys have a part in all this, and it's hard because it hurts with the relationship stuff. You're going to lose family members over this, period. Yeshua said it. I'm not the one saying it. You know he said it. If you're going to lose family over it, you're certainly going to lose friends over it, too. But you don't want to lose them, so you stay anyway. In relationship with them on that same level. I don't get it. All right, next.
From Pretty Bombed, says, how do I respond to a Jewish family when they try to disprove Yeshua by showing me how verses like Matthew 2:15 are linked to verses, Hosea 11:1, that have nothing to do with him?
All right. Okay. Unless you've been on the journey I've been on, you're not familiar with these things. Okay, so in Matthew 2, so the problem is Matthew 2:15 is not linked to Hosea 11:1. Christianity has linked them together, and it doesn't work, okay? Nowhere does Matthew, does Yeshua and Matthew, or the writer of Matthew, say that this is linked to that. So let's see what it says here. Matthew 2:15, it says, let's see. And it remained there until death is when the child was, when Yeshua was born, they brought him to Mitzrayim, to Egypt. And it remained there until the death of Herodias to fill what was spoken by Yahweh through the prophet saying, out of Mitzrayim I've called my son. Okay? Now, there's lots of places that refer to the son being Israel or called out of Mitzrayim. However, the actual quote that says literally that is in Hosea 11:1. Okay? These are all verses I'm familiar with because these are things that I had to deal with an answer for people years ago. So listen to what it says in Hosea 11:1. It says, when Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. But if you read the rest of it, it's a history lesson. It's not a prophecy going forward. That's what they're trying to refer to here. The Jews will say, oh, you claim this goes to this. Nowhere does it say that what's happening in Matthew 2 is talking about Hosea 11:1. We have tons of references to the idea that Israel is looked at as my firstborn. Israel is a metaphor for his son. We see that all throughout Isaiah and other places. And out of Egypt, that's always been the process of coming out of Egypt. Now, because it literally says those words in Hosea 11:1, people say, oh, there you go. If you look at all the verses that Jesus fulfilled, that's what Christianity would call it, right? That will be one of them. But then when you read it, it doesn't work, and then it frustrates you, and you get disillusioned. You may want to quit, because Hosea 11:1 is a history lesson, not a prophecy. Okay? Because the rest of the chapter talks about, and I called to them, and they went from their face, and they slaughtered to the Baals, and they burned incense to carved images, and I taught Ephraim to walk, taking them by the arms, but they did not know that I healed them, and I drew them with ropes, and now it's a history lesson. So I would agree, Hosea 11:1 is not what's being referred to in Matthew 2:15. That doesn't mean that what Matthew 2:15 says, it was not said in many different ways by the prophets. Okay? When it talks about the greater Exodus, that's going to be like the type and shadow of coming out of Mitzrayim, the coming out of Egypt. So, first of all, you don't respond to Jewish family members that want to argue with you about Yeshua. You don't. You say, if you want to argue about this, talk to my teacher. Why don't you take advantage of what you have available to you? Why do you think you have to argue with them? If your Jewish family members are studied, you will lose. Because most of you are not studied like they are, if you have actual studied, yeshiva-trained Jewish family members. You will lose. They have been trained well in the anti-missionary approach. Okay? And so, when I see that come up on the screen, I know exactly what that's talking about, because I've gone through all of this. And so it's only because in a New Testament Bible, it'll have a footnote that says Hosea 11:1. It even says that in the ISR, in at least the 98 version, when it's not connected to that. It's not a fulfillment of that. That is talking about backwards, not forwards. There's plenty of other verses they could have used that point forward, but they don't literally say those words. You know? Look, there's a place that claims, well, it's a fulfillment of prophecy because he said, I'm thirsty. Well, you go back to what the Bible scholars out there claim is the verse. That verse has nothing to do with that. Okay, so there's a lot of problems with the so-called fulfillments in the New Testament actually going back to something in the Old Testament. You know, literally, there's one verse says that, you know, he was called a Nazarene because that fulfilled some prophecy. Well, there's no verse that says that in the Old Testament. Nazarite of any sort is only mentioned in Samson's story and in Numbers 6, period. That's it. But there are places which talks about the branch, and the branch is the Netzer. And then it talks about it from a Netzerim, from that. See, the verses that are quoted and connected by Christianity are a disaster. And so that could really cause people to question. Own that t-shirt, okay? Because they're problematic. Because they don't connect well. And by the way, probably the early church fathers got involved with trying way too hard to make a point. To make everything fulfilling everything that they could stretch anywhere because they needed to make some point about this Messiah. Which is why you don't see that in the other Gospels. It's only in Matthew that you really see that, okay? Where the writer or whoever's edited it is just working way overtime to, you know, make a case that this is the Messiah because of this, this, and this in the Old Testament. Right? Hopefully that helped. Don't fall into that trap and don't think you have to. By the way, here's a freedom. I'm going to give you freedom. I'm going to set you free. Be free! Okay? Be free of feeling you have to respond to everybody. Okay? What's Scripture tell you? It says you should be prepared to do what? Give an answer about your beliefs. It didn't say you should be prepared to defend every argument against your beliefs. In other words, someone asks you why you believe what you believe, you can tell them. Would not necessarily with the point being that you need to then defend and argue with them when they want to attack what you believe. And you say, well, this is what I believe. I'm not going to argue with you. Oh, but what about this? Well, if you have a problem with that, talk to my teacher. Which they won't do. Okay? But if they do, I'm ready for that, right? They're not going to bring anything at me that I haven't already heard. Trust me. Okay? That's not ego and pride. I've just been through a lot. And I've done this research and I've gone through all, I know the arguments. Okay? Because people come to me on a regular basis, Rabbi, did you know about this and this? Yes, I know about all of that stuff. Oh, I read this book. I have the book. Oh, did you know about this teacher? I've talked to him on the phone. Whatever you want to throw at me, okay? Oh, what about what Tovia Singer says? I've spoken to him on the phone. What about what it says in this book? I have that book. I'm telling you. Okay, I have that experience in the street cred, and I understand where this is all coming from. Don't argue with these people. Okay? Don't argue. You can have a discussion with anybody. What does Paul say in Titus 3:9? He says, don't argue with people and debate over scripture, over genealogies, over any of that stuff, over the Torah, because it's fruitless and unprofitable. Okay? Oh, but what about a discussion? What is a discussion? I'm speaking, you're listening. You're speaking, I'm listening. Is that what's happening with your Jewish family friends? No. They're speaking, you're not listening. You're speaking, they're not listening. That's an argument. It's not a debate. In a debate, we're actually challenging each other's points and we're actually listening to each other to see what has the weight and merit in it. This is just arguing. Nobody's listening. Everybody's just yelling and making their point. And they're only listening for words you might say to trigger the next point they want to make. Because then you say something like, oh, and then they jump in with their, oh, yeah, I know how to argue that one. Nobody's listening. So you don't have to respond to everybody. You certainly don't have to do it on Facebook either. And social media, I feel like you have to respond to everybody. How many times have you seen me respond to anything on Facebook? Like zero. I'm not talking about on my own group, okay? But on everybody else's things. Like, I think in 20 years, I've done it once or twice only because someone asked me to step in and say something, okay? And only for clarity, not to get involved in the argument. All right, next.
From Miss K, Romans 5:13, for until Torah Moshe or the Torah since the time of Cain and Abel's offering?
Romans is confusing, but that post is even more confusing. Romans 5:13. Because I know what that's going to. Let's see. Actually, didn't I already cover that in the first part of the sin teaching? Or the second part? I think we covered that in Romans 5. If we did not, we're certainly going to cover it. But I think I already covered that. Go listen to the new teaching called Sin, a Breach of Relationship. Because we absolutely covered this section. Okay? And if we didn't, it will be covered in one of the parts. So that's what I'm going to refer you back to. I'm not going to try to unwrap this whole thing right here. All right, next.
Okay, Robert Thatcher, question. Is there ever a time when it's not appropriate for men to wear tzitzits, i.e. swimming at the gym, working out, dirty job, etc.?
All right. Look, the tzitzit, I remind you to keep the commandments. You would wear them whenever possible, okay? Now, I don't wear them when I'm swimming, okay? They're just going to get all messed up, ruined and everything, and I'm probably not going to be that aware of them anyway when I'm in the water swimming, okay? And usually when I'm in the water swimming, I'm actually swimming. I used to be on a swim team, and I was a lifeguard. I was doing all those things. So I swim, okay? I'm not going to be wearing them if there's going to be equipment they can get caught on, and that could be a problem. So certain types of jobs, well, I shouldn't say I'm not going to be wearing them. I'll wear them tucked in. Okay? Now, I don't want you wearing them tucked in general because they're for me to see yours and you to see mine. They're help to remind me when I see yours that I should be keeping commandments and vice versa. So I think they need to be worn out. So like everybody watching right now, you can see my tzitzit right here on the camera. You should, by the way, you go watch any teacher on you should be looking for their tzitzit first thing you do. Every teacher you've turned on YouTube, see if they walk away from that podium, look for the tzitzit. Now, maybe they're wearing them underneath. I think that's wrong. I think they need to be where you see them. Especially if you're the teacher. Because otherwise people are going to wonder if you're wearing them.
I mean, even if it was okay as a teacher, I would make sure you saw mine to inspire you to know that I'm setting the right example. So dirty job doesn't matter. I don't mind if they get dirty. They're cleanable, okay? So I don't mind. As a matter of fact, have a set that you wear for your dirty job and a nicer set that you wear on Shabbat. And that's fine. There's a functional purpose to it, and at the dirty job, you might still need it. Because sometimes at a dirty job, things can get a little sideways, and you might need to remember that you're keeping Torah. Okay? So if there's a safety issue, you're around equipment where you can't have anything hanging off your clothing because it could get caught in a machine and it could be a problem, tuck them in. Okay? Things like swimwear, it's really tough if you're swimming to have any way to do that. So that would be my one exception as far as, you know, clothing that you would normally go out and wear in public in any kind of way. But otherwise, I wear them all the time. I wear them in my house. I wear them when I'm outside. Okay? So I don't wear them with my pajamas, my sleeping wear, and I don't wear them when I swim. That's pretty much the only things that I would say. Okay? And again, safety issues. Now, if you have a job where they require a uniform, I know people work for the police. Sometimes they're where they work will let them. Sometimes they won't. Or they work for the post office. They work for someplace with an actual uniform. Well, then find out what you can do. And if you can't, well, then wear them inside. Tuck them in. All right? Until you get off the job. But wear them. All right, next.
Jeff and Tony Lumen. Some medical procedures / injections use a dye made from shellfish. Should this be avoided? Also, what's the stance on blood transfusions?
Okay. Blood transfusions are fine. This is not eating the blood. Okay? I would prefer, if I know in advance that I might be going through a procedure which might need blood, because you may need some, you know, additional blood, because you may lose blood during the procedure, to see if you can donate for yourself. They don't generally guarantee you'll get yours, but they try their best to do that. But if somebody else needs it before you do, they may give it to somebody else. Okay, but, you know, I've done that for surgeries I've had where I've gone and donated my own. Okay, and so that, you know, is something you can do. But there's nothing, I would say, scripturally against getting blood transfusions. Medical procedures, injections that use a dye made from shellfish. Look, I think that we're going to need, this is why we need a modern day, call it a Sanhedrin decision making that comes into its own form of like a Talmud, okay? Where we take these things that come up that are not as common, you know, where were people getting medical procedures and injections in scripture, okay, and having to come up with these kind of things? Or taking medications that may be derived from, you know, the gland of this or the, you know, something from some other thing. I think there's definitely a difference between eating these things and a chemical that's derived out of. Now, you want to avoid that the best you can. Get counsel if there's something that you can't to make sure that there aren't any alternatives. But it's not, in my opinion, the same thing as eating the animal, okay? That doesn't mean that you should just, you know, take a pill made with, you know, gelatin just because I said that. No, you should be looking for every possible way to get what you can get without any of these things. You know, maximalist, right? But it's like when we've had this conversation with people that are on thyroid medications. And for a lot of people, the only thyroid medication that works is the one that has the pig base. I don't know why that is, but it is. But it's not eating the animal, okay? The Jewish community would agree with this, by the way. That doesn't make it right. I'm just saying they would agree with this. And so let's just understand that if you have a life and death situation or a major functionality situation that may come into a kosher issue, you should call and get counsel. You should call and get counsel. Because you may be able to do whatever you need to do without an injection or without a pill. There may be other alternative ways to do things. So the question isn't, is it okay to do it? The question is, have you exhausted all the other possibilities? Does that make sense? Are you understanding what I'm saying? Okay. And then if something is a like a life-challenging thing and you need a procedure or a medication and that medication only comes in a certain way, then you should get counsel to see how that would be. And by the way, if you get counsel, Deuteronomy 17 says that you do what the counsel says, and then if it's wrong, it's on the counsel, not on you. You take what I just said and you just run with it any way you want, that's on you. Because I told you you should get counsel. Okay? So, Jeff and Tony, if you've got a specific thing that you're talking about, you should call and give me the context of it. Give me the understanding of what other choices there may have been, if nothing, etc., and let the council make the decision. Counseling, as not like we're going to have a council meeting, but like the counseling be the one that the decision comes out of the council for me. Okay? All right. I know some of you are shaking your head or whatever it is. Look, we have to understand there's a difference between eating something, okay, that we just have to understand it's not the same thing as taking one chemical out of something and using that in some way because it actually works in a medical way. All right? That is not necessarily what Scripture was talking about. It's talking about eating an animal with all of its everything that's involved in the meat and the diseases and all the other stuff. Okay, when you extract out a single chemical and they go through purifying it and whatever they do to make sure that's all you've got, that in my opinion, that's going to end up being likely a different thing. Okay? All right, next.
M2Y, Dessa. This is Matthew 5:40 and Luke 6:29. Should we be like a doormat? Does this mean we should allow people to mistreat us with their words? Because when we do stand up, they say we aren't being like Christ.
Well, if they're saying you're not being like Christ, you're already talking to the wrong people. Because they don't know Yeshua the way they need to. Okay? All right. Matthew 5:40. Okay, so this is the one where it talks about in that section, it says, you know, if someone slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other one. If they wish to sue you and take away your inner garment, give them the outer garment as well. All right. Look, first of all, who's the audience primarily here? Who's Yeshua talking to? Is it a Gentile audience? No, it's a Jewish audience. And so he looks at them as they look at themselves as family. All Jews look like they're related in some way because they have that common, I'm just saying they have that common, not only culture, but race and belief. And it's like an all-encompassing thing, right? A Jew is not just a religion, but it's also a culture. It's also a race, right? It's a people. And he's saying, look, you brothers, if one of you slaps the one person on the face and offer him the other cheek, if they're going to sue you, offer them, it's not just a rule for everything. It's not saying to become a doormat. It's saying is, let's not just keep escalating these conflicts. He also doesn't have time in here, and he didn't take the time to say, well, there is conflict resolution that needs to happen. You're not just going to let people slap you in the face and give you another slap. But in other words, don't fight them. Look to see what you can do to calm the situation down, and then maybe something can come of that. Now, he doesn't say all of that there, but that's what I'm believing is what's going on there. Okay, somebody wants to sue you for your inner garment? Well, maybe they really need that. Well, give them the outer one also. In other words, there may be more to the story than just you going eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and smacking, which is actually a previous verse. This is all about court-related things here, okay? He says, let your yea be yea, and your no be no, in verse 37. He said, you heard that it was said eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. He said, well, I'm going to say, look, that eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth is a judgment rendered by courts. In other words, make sure that the punishment is equal to the crime. He's saying, but I'm going to say to you, why are you rendering then, not in a court, but in your own personal thing, somebody slaps you, so you slap them back, and you start a big fight, and you're going at it, etc. He says, why don't we de-escalate these things? Someone's mad at you and smacks you, say, well, here, you want to smack me? Here, smack me. Get it out of your system. And now that we're calmed down, can we work this out? Can we figure this out? Can we fix this? That's more of what's going on here, okay? He continues. He says, whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and from him who wishes to borrow from you, do not turn away. You heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, and I'm going to say to you, love your enemy. So this is kind of helping them take a new perspective. Okay? So it's in that context. No, you're not a doormat. Nowhere does he say that if the person slaps you, you don't say anything. He's just trying to encourage you not to slap them back. Now, this isn't where you're being attacked. It's where someone lost their temper and reached out and smacked you. Okay. So you're going to start a big brawl over that? It's not like someone came, is like trying to mug you or kind of attack you on the street and try to beat you up. This is more of trying to give a perspective of tit for tat, you know? So you're going to apply the eye for eye. That's a court system thing, not you. That was a judicial thing given in the Old Testament. Make sure that whatever the crime was, that the punishment is worthy of the crime, that they're not out of balance. Okay? Now, next question. Okay, and by the way, let me just wait one more thing, because it said the whole thing about them standing up and saying, well, you're not being Christ-like. Okay. How many of you have had family members, because you didn't reconcile with them or restore a relationship with them, say you didn't forgive them? Lots of hands. Okay. I don't know how to be strong enough about this. Why do you let them tell you what you are or what you did or what you feel? Well, you're not being Christ-like. Well, maybe you are, maybe you're not. Well, why are they the ones who get to decide that? What qualifies them to tell you you're being this or that? Well, you haven't forgiven me. Yes, I have. No, you haven't, blah, blah. You can say whatever you want. I know what I did. I forgave you. You just don't like that I didn't restore and reconcile with you. And so that's where they need to just get my teaching that explains that, right? Forgiveness, reconciliation, restoration. But just why do so? Because people will call here for counsel. My mother said this and my brother. They think, who are they to qualify to say whatever they think they say? Are they Bible experts? Are they anointed appointed? Are they prophets? Are they? What is their qualification to tell you you're not being Messiah-like? No, what they're saying is, I'm going to use the weapon I have at hand to try to manipulate you and make you feel guilty. Well, you're not following the fifth commandment, honoring your mother and father. Why? Because I'm not doing what you tell me to do? I'm 50 years old. I don't have to do what you tell me to do. I have to do it respectfully, though. I have to, with respect, not do what you tell me to do, because I have to do what I have to do. When I was 8, I had to do what you told me to do. Okay? A lot of you struggle with your adult parents, and you're adults too, and you've got your own children, and your parents, especially your Christian parents, say, well, you need to honor me. I'm your mother. You're not honoring mother and father. Say, look, when you fix your Sabbath problem, I'll listen to you. Okay? Because the fourth commandment comes before the fifth commandment. I never said that before. I like it. Let's take these things in order, Mom. Fix number 4, and we'll deal with number 5. Some of you guys said, ooh, that's good. I'm going to use that. Okay? But seriously, why do you let people speak into your lives that have no quality? Some of you will get so upset because somebody you never met on Facebook told you you were wrong about something scripturally. Well, why? You don't listen to me with all the qualifications I have, but you listen to somebody you don't even know who has no qualifications. And you get all upset by and disturbed by what they said. Oh, this person told me I was in sin because I was divorced and now I'm married and blah. And what's their qualification to tell you all that? Go listen to my teaching on divorce and remarriage, and then you get the answer that you need to have. That's why you're supposed to have a teacher. The teacher settles all the arguments. The teacher is the one that's the tiebreaker and all. Well, you feel one way, they felt a different way. Well, then what way is the right way? So you go to your teacher. But oh no. Well, how do I respond? Why are you responding? I don't argue with anybody. Okay? I don't. Even if they're in the walk in the context, I don't argue with you. Elder will tell you that. I don't argue with people. So I say, look, if that's what you want to do, go somewhere else. That's fine. You can believe that, and that's it. I'm not arguing with you. I don't argue. And some of you are thinking, oh, I want to get them to rabbi because he'll just set them straight. No, I'm not going to argue with people. I might tell them this is what it is, and if they don't like it, that's fine. You don't have to like it. Go do something else. I'm just going to tell you what it is. I'm not going to argue with you. If once I realize you're not listening, that's an argument. I'm not going to be talking to you about it. Say, fine, go do what you want. Elders heard me say, fine, go do what you want. I literally say that to people. Okay? And I also say, well, I don't know why you're calling here. If you're not going to listen, what was the point? I mean, if you weren't planning to listen to what I say, why would you call? Let there be a lesson to all of you. Don't call here unless you're planning to listen to what you're told. By me, Elder, Rabbi Tom, it doesn't matter. If you're not ready to listen, why are you calling? Well, I wanted the answer. Well, what are you going to do with it if you don't like the answer? Because you don't just want the answer, you want the answer you like. If you just want the answer, Look, we occasionally get some people to come find us on YouTube or come into here that are mainstream Christians, and I want to appeal to all of them and say, look, do you want the truth or you don't want the truth? Not the truth that's comfortable or the truth that you like or the truth you're familiar. No, the actual truth. Because the truth is the truth no matter what you think it is. No matter what I think it still is the truth. And it may or may not be, you know, convenient or comfortable for you. It may completely flip your world upside down. Anybody had their world flipped upside down? Almost every one of you. Okay? And by the way, that's what revival looks like. He revived you from being dead and flipped your world upside down. Okay? He didn't just bring you someplace where you could smile and feel so warm and fuzzy and sing. That's not a revival. Okay? Because Paul tells us in Ephesians 2, death, right? You revive from what? Being dead, right? He said you were dead in your trespasses. So until you stop doing the trespasses, you're still dead. Okay, so then you're revived in Messiah into the light of truth so that you can stop trespassing. So unless that's happening, it's not a revival. Okay, it's just an emotional experience. They had the same thing at Woodstock. There was no revival. It was a very emotional experience and helped and amped up by all kinds of chemicals. And that doesn't mean anything. Oh, but they're all focused on God. No, they're not. They're focused on a feeling. Because if they're focused on God, they'd want to know what he wants them to do and not do. They don't want that. There's no repentance going on because they wouldn't know what to repent of. Oh, some of them are sleeping around. Okay, so they can repent of that. Some of them are stealing. Okay, some of the very obvious things are also illegal in this country anyway. But where's the breach of relationship repentance? In his relationship with you, he wants to meet with you every Saturday. Not Sunday, not Monday, Tuesday. Not that he doesn't want to meet with you other days. He commands an appointment with you on Shabbat. In Leviticus 23 is the first thing. Okay, I want to meet with you in what's called the Mikra Kodesh, a holy assembly, a gathering, and a commanded assembly on these days. It starts every week with Shabbat. All right, next. I have no idea what started all that, so we'll just go to the next question.
From line upon line, Rabbi, 1 Kings 11, verse 41. Is this the wisdom of Solomon in the Apocrypha? If not, where, what is this text?
Turning me into like the Bible answer man today. 1 Kings 11:41. Okay, in this, the wisdom of, okay. All right, so the question is, in verse 41 says, in the rest of the acts of Solomon or Shlomo, all that he did and his wisdom, are they not written in the book of the acts of Shlomo? Okay. I don't know what's in the Apocrypha as far as that. I don't know where that book might be. We don't have it in the canon anywhere as being some official book. So it's just like they say, are these things not written in the book of Yashar? Okay, we do not have any original copies of a book of Yashar. There is a book out there claims to be the book of Jasher or the book of Yashar. Of course, it's not dated back far enough to be anything that we can have reliance on. Okay, so... my answer to that question is I have no idea what this is referring to because we don't have a sanctioned, canonized book called The Wisdom of Solomon, okay? You need to understand that if you do the research, don't do it, it'll just confuse you. But if you did the research, there's over 100 books that at one point were in somebody's canon before we get the 66 we have now, okay? And so there's over 100 that are not in, on top of these 66... that at some point somebody included in what they thought were the official books should be. But they didn't make it into these 66. Oh, yeah, but this was put together by the Catholic Church and everything else. Well, but this is the one Yahweh has allowed us all to have. And it has passed the test of time for 2,000 years as the one we have. All right, so this is what we have. Okay? Next.
From Carrie. Says, I consider psychology to be, quote, unquote, off the path, being born of paganism and the cult. So why did you decide to use it? The form of personality testing question, isn't that the Enneagram and the astrology the same thing?
Okay. You just referred to a whole lot of things that are not necessarily related. Okay? You did start off correctly by saying, I consider. And you're entitled to your opinion. Okay? All right? I consider understanding why we do what we do and why we struggle with what we struggle with, useful. You can label it with anything you want to label it with. You want to call it psychology or anything else. But people who have studied people over time have noticed that there are certain tendencies in different types of personalities. And so we do the personality test here because I believe it does what I've told you when I first gave it to you. It helps you understand yourself better so you can understand others better. Okay? There's nothing occultic about it. There's no rituals to it. You're going to answer a bunch of questions about words that describe you or don't describe you and situations and how you would handle them. And people who tend to answer those questions a certain way tend to have similar characteristics. This is not astrology. Astrology says if you're born under a certain, you know, constellational configuration on a certain day, that it would affect your personality in some way. Well, you know what? By astrology, I'm a Gemini. So is my brother. We are nothing alike. But we're both Geminis. So, oh no, but it depends on what day and what other things are happening. Look, okay, this is where it starts getting to be straining at all kinds of stupidity. If you actually answer questions about yourself, you're answering questions actually about yourself. So you're describing literally you and how you make choices and what words describe you in different situations, etc. That's going to give somebody a picture of you, including yourself, a picture of you. So it's not ascribing randomly, if you happen to be born under this sign and this thing, that this is who you are. No, this is literally asking you who you are. And then saying other people that have answered the questions like you tend to have these characteristics. Okay? And so people that answer the majority of questions this way tend to have the color code that we use, tend to have a personality that has a driving importance for fun or for peace or for relationship or for leadership. That's a tendency, that's all it's telling you there. And all of you who've done that have found it to be very helpful and very accurate. I know, you've told me that. You've really gained an understanding of why you do well with certain things and struggle with other things. There's nothing occultic about that. Okay, and the Enneagram, I don't use it. Okay, it's just a much more complex sort of, you know, spectrum of, you know, how you can label personality tendencies. But they're all based on you answering questions about who you actually are and how you really feel about things. So that's still not occultic, and it's not anything like astrology. Oh, but when you look at an Enneagram, you look at the way it's designed, it looks like this sort of pagan symbol. Well, you could draw anything the way you want to draw anything. I mean, there's that many different possible categories. And when you understand that everything is connected in some way, you draw lines to them, guess what happens? It ends up being a figure of some sort. Okay? Take the four personalities that we do in the color code. Okay? All four of them connect in some way. But if you put them in a diagram, you're going to have a square. Okay? But if I started drawing lines to them, who knows what that might look like? Okay? Because red and blue have certain things in common. Red and white have certain things in common. Red and yellow have certain things in common. Blue and yellow have certain things in common. Blue and white. I mean, all of them have something in common, which is why when you put them in the figure, you realize that they touch each other in certain ways. Okay? So that means that they do have something in common. Okay? So the red and white, if you draw the square, the red and white would be on the right side of the diagram, so facing me, I guess, this way, and the yellow and blue on the other side. Well, guess what? Red and white tend to be less emotionally driven. Blue and yellow, more emotionally driven. So they have that in common. Very different in how they express it, either, you know, on either side of that spectrum, but there's a similarity there, okay? And so more relational on the blue and yellow, less relational on the red and white. So there's connections there. Leadership or needing to be in charge or running things, much more red and blue. White and yellow have no interest in that, okay? They avoid it, actually. But for different reasons. That's all this is about. So when you have such a complex spectrum like the Enneagram does, and you start drawing lines connecting the things and how they connect and are related and where the similarity, yes, you're going to get a geometric figure of some sort. Okay? Which, by the way, the occult loves to use geometric figures. It is what it is. So don't use what you don't like. All right? If you consider psychology to be off the path, that's fine. Okay, I find understanding why we do what we do and why we struggle with what we struggle with very helpful. And the field of study is called psychology. That doesn't mean I agree with everything psychology has ever come up with. But that's the field of studies, understanding what makes us, what's going on in our heads that affects our choices. Why do we struggle? Why do we succeed? Why is it only in certain areas, in certain ways? And so I use them because they're effective. I don't use them in an occultic way. I don't see outside sources coming in and giving me answers to any of these things. And so I don't see any of that going on in there. And some of you come from that world, okay, because it says being born of paganism and the occult. So in that world, it's all outside stuff. Outside spokesmen, outside sources. Everything's coming from an outside place. Yes? Okay? This is all coming from an inside place, dealing with who you actually are and what you actually struggle with. But if you find a group of people that struggle similarly, and over time we've seen that certain things worked well in helping those people, then we can now teach you what helped them with the same problem you have. That's all we're talking about. By observation. Okay? Not by observing that you happen to be born under a sign in the skies. Because I can find a million people born around the same time I was born who are very, very different people. Very, very different personalities. And so I don't find that that holds a whole lot of water. I mean, I looked at that stuff when I was a teenager, like everybody probably does at some point. And I actually match that sign a lot more specifically as it's written than my brother does. But the point is we're only 3 days apart in our birthday. And we're under the same thing. And yet we're completely different in our personalities. Completely. I mean, if I told you I was a Gemini and someone else a Gemini, you would have no idea what that means. If I told you I'm red and somebody else is red, you would have a better idea what that looked like. If I told you I was yellow and you're yellow, you'd know what that... Because that's much more specific, and it actually has to do with something that is a conclusion based on what I already have in me. Okay, not just I happen to be born this time in this way, whatever it was, right? I mean, I could say the same thing like saying, well, I'm Spanish, I'm French, I'm German, I'm American. Well, that doesn't mean anything either, because I can meet 50 different people from that country and they'd be very different in some ways, similar in some ways too. So it's not enough to just, you know, label, right? We got to be careful with the labeling. But no, I do not think this is occultic. All right, next, as we're running out of time, we got like 5 minutes, maybe one more question.
Okay, Olivier Hoffman, Genesis 1:4, day one, Elohim separated the light from the darkness, and 1:18, day four, to separate the light from the darkness. Can you comment/clarify?
All right, so first let me clarify for all of you that, yes, Olivier's here in the room, but he's not usually here, okay? So I told him he could do this, because he's usually in Houston, so instead of him having the time actually being here when we actually do the live local people, I let him do this, because if he had been in Houston, he could have asked this question. All right, so 1:4, it says, Elohim saw the light, that it was good. Elohim separated the light from the darkness. Okay, and then we have in 1:18, in 17, Elohim set them in the expanse, the lights, right, the two great lights in 16, and then he sets them in the expanse, and one to rule over the day, to separate the light from the darkness. Okay, so we're dealing with two different things, all right? In the beginning, the day one, right, verse one, we have this, and this is where you have to go back to the darkness and light teaching. Ask Mark, he's listened to it 10 times. So, all right, the darkness and light teaching. So there was nothing, right? And out of nothing came something. And we have this all explained. I explained actually all this in the beginning of that teaching. And so light, Torah, Yeshua was brought in, Genesis 1:4, okay? Okay, let there be light, verse 3. But now he's physically bringing light into the world. And he's putting lights in the sky to light up the world. So we now have a physical representation of something that spiritually started off in the beginning. Okay? So he brought light into this confusion and chaos that it started out with in verse 2. This emptiness. But go back to the darkness light teaching. I absolutely start with teaching this. Okay? Right? Didn't I do at the beginning of the teaching? Yeah, Mark said yes. All right? All right, good. Okay, so you go back and look at that. All right, one more if we can squeeze it in. It's 5:27. I know you're all thinking, it depends on how long your answer is, Rabbi. I know.
There's a couple different ones. They're replying back on that when we're talking about woman jumping in. In Deuteronomy 25, so clarification, a couple of people are asking, what about self-defense? Self-defense classes teach women to hit below the belt. And then somebody else asked pretty much the same thing.
All right. That's actually a good question. Okay, so look, first of all, that verse is not talking about self-defense because you are not involved. But if you are involved, if somebody's attacking you, a man is attacking you, okay, now we're talking about a whole different situation, and you need to do what you need to do to be safe. And that means we're back to, like, all's fair in love and war. So now we got war, okay? So no, this would not be against what you, you know, we're not talking about when you get attacked. This is your husband's in a fight, and you're going to step in, and you're going to take it on yourself to go ahead and crush his genitals. That's a problem, okay? So just keep that in mind. By the way, I was a sensei, I was a martial arts teacher years ago. Not the world's biggest fan in trying to go for that shot, okay? Because if you miss, you hit nothing of any value, and it's easy to miss, all right? Because you got the upper leg, the thighs are large, the hips are there. If you miss, you're not hitting anything of any damage. There's much better places to try to strike that will cause enough pain and get the attention that you want. I'd rather you try to kick the shin than to kick the groin. It's a much bigger target, easier to hit. You don't have to lift your leg up as high. You're not going to lose balance or anything, or your knee or whatever. And to hit with the knee, you got to get way too close, and you don't want to necessarily be that way. But of course, if you're grabbed and you're there and it's an easy target, go for it. What I'm just saying is that's not a target I normally taught because it's not necessarily all that effective if you miss. It's easy enough to miss, okay? But if I aim for your shin and miss, I'm going to probably end up on the top of your foot. That's going to work just good too, okay? So I'd rather hit something that even if I miss, it's still going to go well. I'll get what I need, which is your attention, so I can get away, all right? So from a self-defense point of view, I know it's popular because if you hit it, it works quite well if, if. Okay? By the way, I've also seen people get hit there and not be affected by it almost at all. It can happen. All right? So, yes. Anyway, self-defense, not a problem. It's a different situation. Deuteronomy is talking about a woman getting involved where she didn't belong in a fight that her husband was having. Okay? All right. Hope that was helpful and good.